everybody. I'm Brittany Lewis with Forbes Breaking News. Joining me now is Mariana Katsarova, Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in the Russian Federation. Mariana, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
I want to talk about a recent tragic event and the situation that unfolded after. ISIS claimed responsibility for a mass terror attack in Moscow last month that killed over 130 people. In response, the alleged suspects behind the shooting showed signs of being tortured after they were taken into custody. What do you make of the alleged torture of those terror suspects?
Yes. It was horrifying to see the videos that were circulated a couple of days after 22nd of March, after the terrorist attack in Moscow. But before that, the four suspects, who are Tajik citizens, were taken to court. They were taken to Basmanik District Court in Moscow, and they were all displaying signs of torture. It was shocking. Why? Not because the international human rights community or I, as working on these issues for many years, it's not because we didn't know that torture has been routinely used in police custody, in prisons, in detention in the Russian Federation. But what was shocking was that the Russian authorities seemed to purposefully have been displaying these videos of horrific torture. One of the suspects were subjected to electric shocks with cables connected to his genitalia. Another one, his ear was cut and a police officer was trying to force it into his mouth. And a third one, his eye was, he had to undergo an emergency surgery because of his eye being injured as a result of torture. And the authorities were displaying this somehow publicly, not only in front of the judge, and the question is why the judge in the Basmanni court, after seeing that the four suspects were clearly subjected to torture, did not react, did not, issue and made arrangements in a different way and issue a judgment, but continue with the hearing as usual. Why the lawyers who were given by the state to represent the four suspects did not file complaints about their medical condition, about torture. And it seems to me that the Russian authorities have been trying to, on one hand, show the population in Russia that they're active and they are pursuing the terrorist suspects. On another level, I think they were trying also to frightened and still here in other migrant workers in Russia, other people from Tajikistan, citizens in Central Asia, and they have plenty of them. And after the terrorist attack and after the display of these torture methods, the Russian authorities started a campaign of cracking down on migrant workers and on Tajik nationals. So many people have been just stopped for routine police checks of their passports. A number of them have been now charged under the administrative code. Some were deported. Others just ran away from the Russian Federation because they've been afraid for their future. They're afraid to be be targeted by the authorities and the same torture methods to be applied to them. So this is the atmosphere. As I said, the Russian authorities have been routinely using torture in police custody and in prisons. However, this is different because it's now not behind closed doors, and it's in a way paraded to the population, as these are the tough methods that we will be using to crack down on any possible suspects.
If you're saying that it's been used routinely but behind closed doors, and now it is being paraded to the public, it is so public. I mean, just the visuals of this, what appeared to be torture, were so apparent. You saw someone wheeled in, they were barely conscious. You saw their faces completely bruised and swollen. The alleged footage of someone getting their ear cut off and it being shoved into their mouth. What do you think the impact is going to be of this now being so public and the lawyers not responding as well as the judge?
I think it's trying, really, the authorities are trying to instill fear among the migrant workers, among the migrants from Central Asia, the Tajiks, but also I think it's a way of instilling further fear in an already traumatized population like the people of Russia. I was really very concerned to read that on 22nd of March, in addition to the 11 suspects that authorities found in connection to the terrorist attack, and 9 of them have been taken into custody, yesterday or a day ago, it appeared that a Chechen man who was just going to work, legally living in Moscow, of Chechen ethnicity, was, I would say, kidnapped. I mean, he was detained from a bus stop in Moscow on 22nd of March, immediately after the terrorist attack, and taken into custody. 2 hours later, he was found dead. And when his mother, his wife, was asking questions, the authorities, the police, answered to them that he committed suicide. The man was going to work that evening, which also is very indicative of what was happening in Russia in the past decades, especially after the two Chechnya wars. The Chechens in the Russian Federation, the people from the North Caucasus, have been the first and foremost suspects of any, you know, terrorist attacks or any wrongdoing. And the police have been so eager to find any suspects that this man was just taken from a bus stop. Apparently, the mother came out later to say that his mother, who was buried in Chechnya, she revealed that he was, on his body, there are significant bruises, his spine was broken. Clearly, he's been severely tortured, and as a result of that, he died in custody. So I think it just shows to the Russian people even further traumatization of the society, traumatizing the society, which is already traumatized, but also trying to keep people in fear. Since the beginning of the full-scale aggression of Russia against Ukraine 2 years ago, a number of laws have been changed in the Russian Federation in order to punish every manifestation of dissent, any anti-war expression by anti-war activists, by anybody really, by peaceful demonstrators, by human rights activists, human rights defenders. And we saw last year, for example, that two poets who wrote poems, Russian poets, who wrote poems and recited them at a public gathering against the war in Ukraine, the police came for them, and one of them was raped by 3 police officers at detention. Raped for a poem, to be punished for writing a poem for peace. And later, these two poets were sentenced, one to 7 years imprisonment, the other one to 5.5 years imprisonment. Again, for being, using their voices, their talent, their art against the war. I'm not mentioning the name of the poet on purpose also because now in detention, it's very dangerous also being in Russian prison colonies, because if the other prisoners know that you have been raped by the police, sometimes these people are subjected to further sexual violence in detention. So the lawyers didn't even raise further the initial allegation of torture and sexual violence against these men. But nobody is spared. In the Russian society, for example, last year, since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, again, LGBT people, gay men and women or trans people have been subjected to persecution. And some of them have been subjected to torture, especially in the Chechen Republic and the North Caucasus. Also, honor killings are used there against the LGBT community. There was an outcry, actually. A number of people were injured and some died under torture in police custody in Chechnya several years ago when the government there of the Chechen Republic, which is part of the Russian Federation, decided to cleanse the Republic of LGBT people. Now, what happened in Chechnya happens all over Russia because the Supreme Court last year issued, of the Russian Federation, issued a special decision pronouncing the entire LGBT movement, anybody really part of this movement, they were pronounced extremists, as extremist organization. Being accused of extremism in Russia leads to really long-term imprisonment. And already we're seeing the first cases appearing of people being detained. For example, a young woman being detained only because she was wearing, in a cafe, the rainbow flag earrings. She was detained briefly under the administrative code, but we could well imagine that that would lead to criminal charges for extremism later.
You mentioned earlier what message you think Russia is sending to the public over this, but how are the Russian people feeling? What is the sentiment, and is anything going to change in society after seeing this, what appear to be blatant torture?
I mean, I saw in the first hours after the terrorist attack in Moscow, which was quite shocking on so many levels, let alone also that the police, the law enforcement weren't really there for a while to help the people. I think there was a lot of bewilderment turning into anger in the society. Where were the authorities? Where was the police? Where was the fire brigade? You know, to come and assist the victims. At the same time, I noticed that because one of the suspects were actually working in a hairdressing salon, as a hairdresser. And this salon belonged to other Tajik, ethnic Tajik people in Moscow. Sorry, not in Moscow, outside Moscow, in a small town. And I noticed the anger of the people threatening online on the website of this hairdressing salon that if the Tajik nationals do not leave Russia immediately, that they will attack the salon. But we expect people to be sometimes behaving irrationally when facing such tragedy as a terrorist attack. By the way, I was remembering from that day how after 9/11 in New York, some representatives of the Sikh community, who weren't even Muslim, they were Indian, special Indian religion, only because they were wearing turbans, they were chased or targeted by individuals who were really angry. This anger is understandable. I mean, it's not understandable. It's something which, of course, is irrational, but it happens around the world. But when the government of the country, when the police and the law enforcement that should be actually protecting the people, that should be upholding the rule of law, are the ones targeting people despite presumption of innocence, we're not even arguing whether these suspects were guilty or not, but also what kind of evidence are you getting about the terrorist attack from barely alive people who were just severely tortured? So all around the investigative techniques, as we call them, investigative techniques of the Russian authorities, is very questionable whether, you know, they're getting any results because they're using severe torture.
So from what you're saying, it sounds like you believe torture isn't even an effective way to gather information in the first place. And I want to read a title from an op-ed from the Moscow Times and get your response to it. The op-ed was entitled this: "By torturing Moscow attack suspects, Russia risks radicalizing future terrorists." What do you think of that? Do you think that sentiment holds true?
I think that I'm not sure. There is no obvious science behind what really radicalizes terrorists, but I personally always believe that terrorism is some, on one level, it's a resort, the last resort of desperate people. It's the last resort of people that maybe haven't been heard enough. I do believe in dialogue. And as you know, I think in dialogue even with war criminals, because we have to, in the end, what matters is saving lives. And as you well know, we've seen it in the defeats of law enforcement around the world. They don't negotiate with terrorists. Many, many governments do not negotiate with terrorists. But I'm a human rights expert, so I have a different approach. I think what the torture, the use of torture on display is doing, it's terrorizing the Russian society and also showing that there are no boundaries, let alone international law obligations of the Russian Federation, let alone their own legal standards. Torture is prohibited in all circumstances. That's why at the UN we have the UN, United Nations Convention Against Torture. Russia is a party of this convention. No circumstances could be an excuse. We know of some countries and some governments that actually have even put on their legal books, on the law, that torture in some circumstances is allowed. I think in all circumstances, torture as investigative technique never leads to the truth. Because of course, under torture, anybody would admit doing anything really just to make the torture stop. Russia hasn't signed and ratified yet the second optional protocol of the Convention Against Torture, but the main document it has ratified, and it's forbidden in Russia to torture in all circumstances. We also see political prisoners in Russia. Navalny, Alexei Navalny, for example, has been kept under torturous conditions. It may not be the beatings and the electric shocks, but it's Putin repeatedly. Navalny, for example, spent 296 days in punishment cell under torturous conditions of detention, which might have led to his death, but the Russian authorities are not really yet revealing what are the circumstances about his death. We now see it with other political prisoners. They don't get access to medical care, adequate one in prison, or they have been put repeatedly in these punishment cells with really subhuman conditions, and they are in solitary confinement there. So the psychiatry, like in the old Soviet times, the psychiatry, the forced psychiatric treatment has been used again by the authorities in Russia in connection to the war against Ukraine. Anti-war activists and government critics have been subjected to some of them to enforced incarceration in psychiatric treatment, involuntary. So I think given the brutality with which the Russian authorities have been mobilizing men all over the Russian Federation, sending them to fight in Ukraine, now we're seeing it with some of the migrant workers who have been forced to go and fight in Ukraine against their will, really. Asylum seekers as well. Indigenous people in Siberia, in the remote places of Russia, they have been brutally mobilized without really asking them, just taken from their homes, door to door, by the Russian authorities. And given this display of torture by the government, by the law enforcement, I think it's a very dangerous precedent in the society. We already have the Ministry of Defense of the Russian Federation taking recruits, mobilizing prisoners, sometimes prisoners who have been sentenced to life imprisonment for killing somebody or for sexual violence, rape and murder, and promising them to their record to be deleted, for them to be then released, and sending them to fight in Ukraine. This was started at the beginning of the war against Ukraine by a paramilitary formation, the so-called Wagner Group, of which Prigozhin, who is now allegedly dead, after an attack against him and his immediate circle. But it was the Wagner Group, the paramilitary group, that was allowed somehow to go to Russian prisons and get all these prisoners and amnesty them, but send them to fight in Ukraine. Now, after the Wagner Group, is the Russian Ministry of Defense that is using this technique. And we see a society where we have not only these prisoners, but also other men who have been fighting in Ukraine, returning then into the society. But particularly with the prisoners, they have repeated offenses, many of them. They either start raping again in peaceful Russia, or they start murdering again. And we see the level of domestic violence increasing in the society. Mind you, Russia is a country which does not have a law prohibiting domestic violence, which is shocking of itself, with the level of violence against women in the society. So you have the so-called heroes from the special military operation returning back in civilian life, and the first victims of their aggression are their spouses, their wives, their children. There has been several cases in court where the judges, in cases where men who returned from the war and then killed their wives, they're receiving lesser punishment only because they were heroes from the special military operation. So they're receiving a much lesser punishment for a crime which otherwise somebody would have been punished. So the use of torture, the use of brutality, by the state spreads, I think, as on one level instills fear in the peace-loving citizens. On another level, it brutalizes further the relations in the society, and also it shows impunity. And when there is impunity, we expect anything, not just by the authorities, but in the general population. If nobody is responsible for torturing somebody with electric shocks in their genitals, for three police officers raping the poet for a poem, I think it's a society in crisis. It's a society in crisis of the rule of law and of human rights, really.
Mariana Katsarova, thank you so much for your expertise on this really important conversation. I hope you can join me again soon.